The following program is brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz and Dr. Philippa Cheatham, where you can get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz and Dr. Cheatham, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, the chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York, with co-host Philippa Cheatham, attending in urology at Winthrop University Hospital, here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everyone. Woo! And welcome again to another live round of Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz. We've got a full studio here this morning with guests. Dr. Cheatham to my left, Dr. Sherwin Zagaroff to my right. And we have a researcher with us, a young researcher, soon to be, Dr. Andy Ho, who's running our metformin trial for prostate cancer patients. Maybe we'll hear from Andy this morning. Good morning, Philippa. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. In fact, Andy did a sterling job this week getting our abstracts in for the American Urologic Association. The deadline was 11:59 on Monday night, and we sent the final abstract in at 11:53.
Yeah, of course. The American way.
Of course.
Last minute. We were trying to push
PM.
And push, yeah. Andy, you're doing a great job. How do you think it's going for you this research year with our department?
It's fantastic. I'm having an absolute blast working with you guys here.
That's the correct answer.
Well,
how much did you pay him to say that on
there? I know. There's a card in front of him that actually says that. It's interesting.
You know, it's nice that we were able to secure funding through some of our patients and donors for a student like Andy who is training now in medical school on Long Island and Stanford grad and a great guy and gives him the opportunity to run and help us run a clinical trial. And why don't you just tell us briefly about that, Andy, what this trial is all about?
So the trial's for prostate cancer patients who have failed primary therapy. And we're using metformin, which is typically a diabetes drug, to help control some of the PSA levels and control the cancer.
Why would we use a diabetic medication, tell people if they're listening, to control prostate cancer?
Well, we don't know exactly the mechanism, but other studies have shown that metformin is able to control the glucose and the glucose which the tumor feeds off of. So by lowering that, we're able to control the tumor. So that's the idea behind the whole thing.
And actually, metformin's been around a long time, and it's a pretty well-tolerated drug. And there's lots of interesting research, I think, looking at other cancers. Is that correct? It's not just prostate cancer?
Yeah, not just prostate cancer. It's been tested on breast cancer as well, and it's shown to decrease prostate cancer and cancer-specific mortality in diabetics who are on metformin. So it's a very promising drug.
Terrific. How many patients do we have so far enrolled?
So we currently have 5 enrolled. We're looking for more, and we're also looking to open up a California site as well soon. So we're hoping to expand across the country.
All right. Well, if you're interested, Andy, why don't you just give out the number that people can call if they are interested or know of a loved one. This is a prostate cancer trial. If you've had radiation or surgery and the PSA is going up, we talk a lot about that here on Katz's Corner. If the PSA is going up, what do we do? Here's a possible alternative, and it's very risk-free. I mean, the side effects are very few with this medication.
Yeah, it's all our patients are tolerating their drug really, really well.
Excellent.
So the number is 516-535-1900. Again, that's 516-535-1900.
Great job, Andy. Okay.
Who do they ask for? They ask for you?
They can talk to me directly.
Say, Andy Ho.
Yeah, sure.
All right,
the metformin guy.
Another example of how, you know, Winthrop is really excelling in the research that we're doing. You know, I'm just listening. I heard this is the first time I'm hearing about this, but what a great idea. And, you know, this is really research that I think is going to be implemented, in the future. And I just want to congratulate you. Really great research topic and idea.
Yeah. And he's actually put 9 papers, I believe, into the American Urological Association's national meeting this year. So,
I mean, for people that don't know that, that's a huge number.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
It's a lot of abstracts.
Very productive. Not only the clinical, but also the research. This morning we're going to, Philippa, last week was a great show, wasn't it? I mean, we had Dr. Ron Hoffman talk about integrative medicine. If you've missed the show, by the way, right, Philippa? They can always get it on the podcast.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely.
But it was a great show.
Go back to the podcast. If you go to www.wabcradio.com, click on the icon for Katz's Corner, and you'll see the show dated for Sunday last week. That's wabcradio.com. He was a fantastic guest. Great questions. Lots of questions generated. Great feedback from listeners on the show. And a quick shout out to Norm, who was one of the loyal listeners of Katz's Corner, who did the New York Marathon last week. He actually sent us a present to the office. We both have a T-shirt from
him. That's nice. Yeah, I mean, I love Ron, and of course, you know, you and I are very strong believers of the entire holistic program. In fact, one of the other areas that Andy is looking at is the large number of patients that we have at Winthrop on active holistic surveillance for patients with early stage prostate cancer. And we have great results with that. And Ron is has so much information about all aspects of healthcare and how. I love the fact that he's integrative. You know, it's not just holistic, but it's like, okay, well, you might need an antibiotic, but if you take an antibiotic, take a probiotic. Or if you're having a, you know, recurrence of a cancer, check your vitamin D level. You know, I mean, not to have chemo. Some people, obviously, we need chemo radiation, but how can we, you know, extend or increase the rates of our cancer cure rates with these herbals and alternative medicines?
He covered a lot of information on the show last week,
yeah.
And he looks fantastic. He's a great advocate for
you guys making
medicine.
Me feel bad. I was supposed to be on the show last week, and then it says the show must. I listened to the podcast, which actually has great, you know, resolution. You could actually, you know, it's really good to get a clear understanding of what's going on in the show. And then I heard in the beginning you said the show must go on, and now you guys are sitting down talking about how great the show was, even though Dr. Zagaroff wasn't here.
No, oh, not that he wasn't here, but he was a wonderful
hey Aaron, I think that's his cue to turn the attention to
okay, we're going to talk to Dr. Zagaroff. I just want to
get the message.
I just got a text here from Maureen, our administrator, that also said that we should also let patients know about our 800 number, which is 800-877. I'm sorry, our 800. The 800 number is 877-764-5057. That's 877-764-5057. Okay.
What's the 800 number for?
It's a toll-free number if you want to just, instead of using the 516 number.
Can I should use that. That's great.
Yeah.
So if I need to reach someone in the urology department, I just use the 800 number myself.
You can, but our number, the great thing about our office is that we don't have a phone tree. There's no automated phone response. You call our number in Long Island, and you get a live voice. Can you believe that?
That's great.
Let's talk with Dr. Sherwin Zagaroff this morning, who is an attending urologist at Winthrop University Hospital and specializes in two areas. And we're going to get to them both on erectile dysfunction, managing men with erectile dysfunction, both medically, surgically, if needed, as well as male infertility. So good morning, Sherwin, and thanks for coming
good
in today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back on the show.
I think he's also the director of trauma surgery now.
Well, she's only saying that because I was on call, and I've had a lot of traumas for the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, we've had we are a level one trauma center, and we are seeing, unfortunately, you know, trauma patients and motor vehicle accidents, and I know you were involved with a kidney trauma last week. And that's why you weren't here. And managing these patients, which, you know, as I said to Philippa last week, I mean, we don't always say that we save lives, but when it comes down to trauma, and you've got someone with a gunshot wound or a severe injury that's bleeding from the kidney or the spleen, and you're there and you're on the front line, and it doesn't matter if it's at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning or at midnight, you've got to show up and you've got to be on your game to save that person.
We have a great trauma team at Winthrop. It's, you know, they're very quick. They know what they're, you know, it's very important in trauma to very quickly, you know, assess the situation. And I looked at the trauma team and how they treated these patients, you know, several patients, how they treated it, and they're just fantastically efficient.
Okay. So tell us, Sherwin, in your practice out at Winthrop, and what's very common that you see? I mean, there's someone on the phone now calling us about a varicocele.
Varicoceles, yeah, sure.
What is that about?
You know, varicoceles, about 13% of the population has them. So it's not a very uncommon thing. What is it? It's a dilation of the veins in the testicular area that surround the testicle. They're veins that shouldn't be there. What can happen if you have it? When you're a child and you have it, the testicle might not even grow. So that's one thing. It could cause pain as an adult. It could cause infertility or fertility problems as an adult. And now what we're realizing, because of this whole testosterone, you know, blowing up on, you know, the news and on TV, and you hear all these commercials, is that varicoceles over a long time can also destroy or hurt the cells that make testosterone called Leydig cells. So a large varicocele or a varicocele on both sides can cause hypogonadism or andropause or whatever you like to call it, but it could cause someone to have a low testosterone as an adult. This is a new research that's come out in the past couple of years.
When you say dilation of veins, you mean varicose veins around the testicle?
Yeah. You know what I compare it to when people come to my office? I say, like, you know, varicose veins of the legs. Yeah, I say this is, you know, the same type of thing in the testicle. Why is it bad? Testicle is 2 degrees cooler than core body temperature. It's actually outside your body if you think about it. So it does not like to be hot. Not that you should go cool your testicles or anything like that, but if you have those veins there, it's a heat sink effect, and it could, you know, by the heat, damage these important structures that make testosterone and sperm,
and also
cause pain.
We image testicles for all sorts of other reasons, lumps, cysts, pain. And
sure.
You see that, you see varicocele on a report often when you do a sonogram, but it doesn't necessarily mean it needs treatment, does
Absolutely
it?
Right. I think that's a great point, Phil.
So you're talking about a condition in men, and it usually occurs on the left side.
Usually on the left side because of the anatomy.
So in the left testicle, you feel the testicle, and it feels what, larger?
You know what they say? It feels like a bag of worms are inside the testicle. Testicle itself is, the size is not affected. If anything, it might be smaller than the other side because of the
So if you have this bag of worms, the swelling, it can cause low sperm count, low testosterone. It's possible. Pain.
Yeah.
It can cause pain. Yeah. And so if someone comes in, especially if they're young, you know, you see young kids too, like in their, can a teenager have this?
Absolutely. I have a lot of teenagers that come into the office, and you know, they come in with, there's different grading systems of varicoceles, and the highest grade is a grade 3 where you could actually see the veins. And I tell you the truth, I've had some, you know, teenagers come into the office and say, listen, I just don't like how you could see all these veins in the testicle. So that's another, you know, reason why we might treat a varicocele, because, you know, of a cosmetic.
Now, on Thursdays when I operate and I do my cryosurgeries, you're in the next room commonly with the microscope. I see you often with the microscope, that big microscope, and you're operating on the testicle. Is that
right?
Are you doing the varicocele with the...
Well, we do at Winthrop probably the most varicoceles out of the hospitals in New York.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
And
I think on a given day we're doing 4 or 5 of them.
I see the schedule.
Yeah.
You got a lot of varicoceles going. I didn't realize it was so common, you know?
It's very common. Does it always need to be fixed? The answer would be no. If you have it, I do recommend seeing a specialist like myself. And there's a couple other people out in the New York area that I think specialize in this that are great.
But what are you doing? I see with this big microscope, you have this patient lying on a table, and you got the microscope over the patient, and you're looking into the microscope.
Well,
what's going on there? You're looking at the veins?
What we do is, you know, in order for us to, you know, limit how big the incision has to be, what we used to do is a big hernia incision. So we do a micro incision. It's about the size of a keyhole. It's right over the penis, which doesn't have fat, doesn't have a muscle or fascia, just a little bit of fat. You could take the cord there and use the microscope, and that enables you to have a very small incision and even get the smallest of the veins. What we do is we tie it down and we cut it, and you know, it's like a day, maybe. It's like a walk in the park type of surgery, for especially for someone that's done a lot of them. And for the patient, instead of 2 weeks, you know, being, you know, out of, you know, commission, it's about a day or two. They take one or two Percocets. They're back to work. If I do it on a Thursday, they're back to work certainly by Monday.
And what do you think to that over embolization, where the interventional radiologists will often block off the veins with like coils or foam?
Philippa, you're just full of great questions today. You had your Cheerios? You had your Wheaties? So embolization is another way that we do treat varicoceles. It's, I wouldn't say standard of care. Usually we do it for recurrence of varicoceles. Doing the microsurgical approach, the recurrence rate for a varicocele is about 1%. And that's like across the nation, even in people that might not know how to do it. I've done hundreds if not thousands already. We haven't, knock on wood, haven't had any recurrences.
So I guess a lot of men come to you for infertility. Yes. They've been trying to conceive with their wife, and they've haven't had success. And I guess about half of the situations, it comes down to the male is the problem. And the most common cause of male infertility is this varicocele. So you fix it. And then does the sperm come back? I mean, if a male has a low sperm count and then they have this varicocele, they come in, and then in a few weeks, is the sperm count bumped up?
That's a great question. So sperm, unlike a female that's born with all of her eggs, sperm in a male is made every 76 days. So no matter what you do, you have to really wait 76 days to see some type of improvement because of that cycle of sperm production. So I usually tell patients after a varicocele surgery, we usually wait about 2 to 3 months and then we get another semen analysis. And what we see is a slow, you know, rise in semen parameters, especially what we call morphology, or how the sperm looks, how fast they swim. And then progressively we'll see over the year rises in concentration if that OSIP had, you know, taken a hit as well.
And I know also, Sherwin, you do a lot of patients now that are about to undergo chemotherapy. And, you know, we see younger men, younger patients now that are diagnosed with cancers that need radiation, need chemotherapy, and want to preserve their sperm. Tell us about that and the program that you have at Winthrop for this.
So when I came over to Winthrop, we set up an oncofertility program. And what that is first off, it's getting the message to the patient. When it comes to cancer, you know, doctors and patients and families only really think about the cancer and not necessarily the aftermath of what surgery or chemotherapy can do. So we, you know, help the patient and the doctor, you know, counsel the patient on how the sperm production can be affected, and they might not be fertile for the rest of their lives. And it's very important for an 18-year-old kid, even though they have cancer, to have this discussion. And we have now, you know, started counseling these patients about this. And what we do is we have them come in a day or two before, you know, their chemotherapy or radiation, and we bank sperm, meaning we cryopreserve sperm, and it could be, you know, frozen for the rest of their lives. So if the time comes, and in the future, if their sperm count doesn't come back to normal, we have something in the bank for them, and they could have, through assisted reproductive technology like IVF, they can have a child.
I would gather that brings up a lot of emotional things. I mean, here you have an 18-year-old that's just diagnosed with cancer that's about to start chemotherapy, and you're saying, well, you know, we want to, you know, it may affect your testicles. And I think it's very wise and very smart, and I give you a lot of credit because you're right. A lot of doctors in the past wouldn't be thinking along these lines. But now we're seeing that the cure rates with many of these cancers, lymphomas, leukemias, that are solid tumors that require chemo, but a lot of them are being cured. And, you know, the next few years of their life might be rough, but then if they're 18 and they're in their mid-20s and they've been cured with this cancer and they want to go on and have fertility, and now you're telling them that there is this option because you've saved their sperm.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, we've gotten, you know, like you said, better and better every year with our cure rates. And we have to think about, you know, a young man's, you know, future, which includes, you know, their ability to have a child with their own genetic component. So I think the Oncofertility program is great. Parents and patients really, really appreciate it, especially when after the fact of, you know, getting the chemo and or radiation or both or surgery, they do realize they do a sperm count and they see that their sperm count is zero, but they're relieved to know that, you know what, you know, I did that thing and I have sperm. I'm frozen and, you know, I'm not going to have to worry about, you know, having a kid.
And so we have this program at Winthrop.
We do.
Is it, I hate to bring up cost in something like this, but I imagine that, I mean, would do insurance carriers, do they pay for this?
Or they is it, don't. They
so
don't.
So yeah. Is that, is, I mean, of course, parents want to do whatever they can for the child.
Absolutely.
Not only getting rid of the cancer, but also the thinking, you know, and with your team, helping them think down the line, you're going to get through this, we're going to get you through this, but let's also think about that he's, you know, he's going to get married one day and he's going to want to have kids of his own.
Sure.
So is it a big expense?
It's a, you know, it's expensive. Uh-huh. But what we did, and we do sperm banking for various other reasons, including people that might want to have a vasectomy, they might want to bank sperm. But for the cancer patients, we do it for cost. And I think that's a couple hundred dollars a year. And
okay, that's
we worked that out with, you know.
Oh, I thought it was going to be multiple thousands.
It usually is.
Okay.
You know, that's why I mentioned we do it for other reasons. And, you know, that's where, you know, we take maybe a little bit of that profit and then we can put it towards the cancer patients.
Beautiful.
Charge them cost. For somebody that has absolutely no means, we're beginning to raise money for paying for their, we've already raised $50,000 and we're beginning to raise more money because it is costly, so they can bank sperm as well, because it shouldn't be because of finances where someone, you know, doesn't have the, you know, the ability or the choice to have this fertility preservation.
If you're just waking up on Cancer's Corner, 7:22 in the morning, we're talking.
Flies around.
It does. We're talking with Dr. Sherwin Zagaroff this morning about male infertility. We have a few phone calls, Dr. Z. Maybe we'll take one in East Meadow. Brett, are you still with us? Good morning.
Good morning, doctors. How are you?
Okay.
Good morning, Brett.
My son is 23. He just celebrated his 50th year cancer-free. And he, you know, we've been storing sperm for him for the last 5 years. Thankfully, our insurance does cover it. The quality of his sperm, though, hasn't improved. And he recently went to the doctor and was diagnosed with a rather large. I mean, as soon as he dropped his drawers, the doctor said, yep, you have a varicocele, a pretty large one. Question about the procedure that you do. Compared to other procedures that handle this varicocele, what is the rate of incidence with hydrocele with your procedure? And I think you already said the recurrence rate is only 1%.
Correct? Right. So yeah, it's less than 1% for a recurrence rate. A hydrocele, for people that might not know, and you know, for the rest of our audience, is water accumulation between the testicle and the tunica vaginalis, which is the surrounding tissue of the testicle. It causes a large testicle. That's also, historically, by the, you know, different papers, it's 1%. In my practice, like I said, out of the thousands we've done, only had one occurrence of a hydrocele, so it's quite low.
And even if you were to have that hydrocele, which is a
buildup
of fluid. So I guess the question is, and Brett, thank you for your phone call. It's a great phone call.
A great question.
The question is, you know, if you do in your hands, what is the overall complication rate or side effects?
So what's
of
the
this?
What do I tell patients? There's always a chance of infection or bleeding. Very, very low risk. The chance of it coming back, less than 1%, probably less than even 0.5%. Chance of a hydrocele, I'd say about the same percentage, less than 1 to 1/2 of 1%. It's in the right hands. You know, what else can happen? You know, for people that really might not know what they're doing, there's a testicular artery there. If you cut the testicular artery, you could actually lose the testicle. Because that's the main artery.
I would guess
that's
rare, though, with a microscope. You could really see that artery.
You don't see the artery. Well, what we use is not only the microscope, we use a micro Doppler. It's about 5 millimeter Doppler. It's very expensive, you know. And one thing about Winthrop, they've been absolutely fantastic. When I first got there, they bought me a brand new state-of-the-art microscope. I asked them for things I needed instrument-wise, and I wanted this Doppler to ensure that we are not going to ever bag that artery. And without a flinch, they provided all of that for us. And they really set up this microsurgical program at Winthrop for me. And it's not only, you know, me, but it's also the hospital providing these instruments and having
Do you think that male infertility over the last few years is increasing? I mean, do you think that male sperm counts are going down?
I do. Well, I think...
Are there studies to support that?
There are studies to support that, and I think the reason is because of the metabolic syndrome and the way that we're eating and what, the oxidative stress from smog and where we're living and cigarette smoke and all that can, cause trouble with fertility. So it might not be to the point where they can't have children, but we are on a yearly basis, if you do semen analyses on a group of people or a cohort of people, there are a couple studies out there that show the semen analysis, if you randomize it and do it year to year, have slowly come down.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I know that there's a number of fellowships now, and you did one on male infertility. Mm-hmm. And I just see, and I see the schedule, and you're certainly taking care of a lot of these men with male fertility issues. And also, I guess one of the things that you'll do as well is a biopsy of the testicle, right? When would you do that? Because some men, they have, I guess, zero sperm or very low sperm, and you want to find out what the problem is. You can bring them in and just do a biopsy of the testicle.
Right. I rarely do it because you don't really, there's a lot of other clinical tests you can do rather than a biopsy to find out what's going on. But in patients that have, like you said, no sperm or azoospermia, and I really can't pinpoint the cause, like primary testicular failure coming from the brain or, testicular failure, I'll do a biopsy to see if we can do in vitro fertilization or anything like that. What I'm really looking for is this disease called Sertoli only cell syndrome, which really tells you that there's not going to be any sperm in the future if I want to go do a microdissection testy.
What about blood tests? Are there any? We were talking last week with Ron Hoffman about some blood tests that men should get. If a male comes into your office and let's say they're having problems with fertility, they've been referred by the gynecologist, whatever. The woman's been evaluated; she's fine. It could be the male as the part of the infertility problem. What blood tests do you recommend?
What do I get? I get testosterone, both free and total.
Okay, that's a big one.
Serum hormone binding globulin, which can be involved in, losing part of the free testosterone.
Okay.
Prolactin, which is a brain hormone that could lower testosterone. Estradiol, which is, basically estrogen. FSH, which is the hormone signal from the brain telling the testicle to make sperm. LH, in the same respect, tells the testicle to make testosterone. I also get, hemoglobin A1C. Are they diabetic? I get thyroid function panels.
Why would diabetes?
Diabetes can affect. It could cause a neuropathy and it could cause damage to the sperm and sperm production. And I also check the thyroid level, which can do the same thing.
So there's a lot of blood, and those tests are very helpful. They really can make a difference.
Quick
Absolutely.
Question, Jay. Do you have patients do the blood tests early morning? Because
yes, I tell them. I have a lot of my office is quite busy, and a lot of patients come in at 6 o'clock, and they want to know what the testosterone is. What I do is I just tell them, either come back to the office tomorrow morning. You don't have to wait in line or anything like that. We'll get the blood test. I usually tell them between 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock in the morning.
And that's because levels tend to be higher in the morning.
Yeah. Well, are we done already?
Yeah, that's the end of the show.
Goodness.
Well, that was Dr. Sherwin Zagaroff, who really takes care of the majority of the infertility patients here out at Winthrop and does a great job with the microscope and the varicoceles.
Always got plenty to say. I think that's his hint to come back on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are you inviting me back, Philippa?
Of course. Philippa?
Thank you, Sherwin.
All right.
Thank you, Andy Ho and Philippa. Everyone, have a great day. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.